This programming is brought to you in part by the English Catholic Church of North America. The English Catholic Church of North America, reborn in 2024, our mission is to provide Episcopal protection and oversight for the Catholic believers and organizations, churches, parishes, religious orders, and other ecclesiastical organizations who are not aligned with the Roman, Anglican, or Orthodox communions. This unique mission allows us to serve as a spiritual home for those seeking a place of authentic Catholic faith and worship, rooted in tradition, yet independent of the constraints of larger ecclesial bodies. It is led by the Most Reverend Jaden Haygood, who also serves as the Superior General of Fratelli della Croce and Ordinary of the Archdiocese of the Midwest. Under the guidance of Archbishop Scotty McLaughlin, Metropolitan Archbishop of the English Catholic Communion and Spiritual Head of the Church, the English Catholic Church has grown into a communion committed to preserving the ancient traditions of the Catholic faith while meeting the pastoral needs of diverse communities across 13 states and 35 countries. For more information, please visit our website at eccna.weebly.com. That's eccna.weebly.com. Thank you, and enjoy your program. My name is Bishop Jaden Haygood, and you're listening to the Discovering the English Catholic Church podcast. Welcome to episode 4 of Discovering the English Catholic Church podcast. I'm Bishop Jaden Haygood, and in today's episode, we're going to talk about a bold but necessary idea, and then finish with a few questions from our listeners. So let me start by saying the English Catholic Church is not a new invention. It's the natural and faithful completion of what the English Reformers and the Oxford Movement began, but never finished. We're going to look at what that means, why it matters today more than ever, and how it positions the English Catholic Church not just as a restoration movement for a lost patrimony, but as a global Catholic mission for the English-speaking world. Let's begin with a quote that's often misunderstood and perhaps misused. Archbishop Geoffrey Fisher of Canterbury once famously said, "We have no doctrine of our own. We only possess the Catholic doctrine of the Catholic Church, enshrined in the Catholic creeds, and those creeds we hold without addition or diminution." It's a powerful statement. In fact, we agree with it entirely. But here's the hard truth. Today, that claim rings more like an aspiration than a reality within the Anglican Communion. Anglican provinces across the globe now promote doctrines and practices that contradict the very Catholic creeds Fisher upheld. The claim that we have no doctrine of our own has become a kind of cover for doctrinal ambiguity, liturgical fragmentation, and moral relativism. And that's where the English Catholic Church steps in, not to reject Fisher's vision, but to fulfill it. What if the English Reformation had gone all the way? What if the Oxford movement had been allowed to reach its ecclesiological and sacramental conclusions? The answer is rather simple. It would have looked like the English Catholic Church. The English Catholic Church holds fast to the Catholic creeds, the apostolic faith, and the sacramental life, not with Roman additions, not with Protestant subtractions, but with the full intention of the English Catholic Church through every phase of her history. The Celtic and Romano-British bishops, who existed long before Augustine's mission in 597, the Catholic martyrs of England, who defended the faith in every century, the reformers who sought purification, not abolition, the Oxford fathers, who rediscovered the riches of the undivided church, and now a new generation willing to pick up where they left off. This isn't revisionism, it's restoration. It's the final stage of a process that began 5 centuries ago. The English Catholic Church is not just about rediscovering or recovering English patrimony for England's sake. That would be far too narrow of a vision. Today, more than half the planet speaks English as a first or second language. The English Catholic Church is positioned not only to honor the spiritual and cultural legacy of the English Church, but to lead the next chapter of global Catholicism for the English-speaking world, where Rome insists on Latin hierarchy, where Constantinople binds you to Greek custom and culture, where Anglicanism fragments into chaos. The English Catholic Church offers a home. A Catholic Church that is orthodox in doctrine, sacramental in worship, English in voice, global in reach, conciliar in government, free from centralized tyranny, accountable to Christ, Scripture, and the historic Church. Our structure reflects that vision. Each national or regional church, like our diocese for all of North America, has its own primate who exercises real jurisdiction, but remains united in communion under a metropolitan primate whose role is spiritual, not despotic. So if you're an Anglican bishop who holds tightly to the 39 Articles or to the 1662 Book of Common Prayer, we get it. Your instincts for orthodoxy and reverence are good. But here's the question. Can you really live out what those articles intended within today's Anglican landscape? Or are you ready to go deeper into the Catholic Church England was always meant to be? This is not an escape, it's a completion. It's not an innovation, it's faithfulness. This is the English Catholic Church. Catholic without corruption, Anglican without ambiguity, apostolic without apology. Now let's transition to a couple of questions asked by our listeners. Question number one comes from Cedric Gaddis on Facebook. Could you explain more about apostolic succession? The truth is, without it, you may have good intentions, moving worship, even right doctrine, but you do not have the church in its fullness. The English Catholic Church does not just claim to be like the Church of the Apostles. We are part of the unbroken chain, bishop to bishop, laying on of hands, stretching themselves back to the original 12 themselves. We receive that succession through multiple historic lines. From Peter, through the Roman tradition passed down through valid Roman Catholic bishops even after the Reformation. From Archbishop Pierre Martin Nodentuk, a Roman Catholic bishop who consecrated bishops across traditional lines after Vatican II, many of whom were later conditionally recognized by Rome. From Dom Carlos Duarte Costa, a Catholic bishop and founder of the Brazilian Catholic Apostolic Church, whose line maintains valid orders, unbroken despite ecclesiastical separation. From the old Catholic movements, particularly through the Union of Utrecht, which was explicitly affirmed as valid by the Roman Catholic Church in multiple formal declarations, including Apostolicae Curiae's successors. This isn't about name-dropping bishops, it's about continuity and legitimacy. Apostolic succession isn't magic. It's not a relic. It's the visible guarantee that Christ's authority continues in his church through real shepherds with real sacraments in real time. It ensures that sacraments are valid, especially the Eucharist and holy orders. The doctrine is preserved, not reinvented. That the church has true pastoral and teaching authority, not just spiritual good intentions. That Christ promised, "Lo, I am always with you, even to the end of the age," is fulfilled through a living church, not just a historical memory. Before Rome ever imposed control in England, the British and Celtic bishops already held valid succession from early Gallican and Mediterranean bishops. Remember that by the time of St. Augustine's mission in 597 AD, he claimed by his own words that there were already bishops in Britain. The Synod of Whitby didn't begin the church. It aligned calendars and fostered unity. So what the English Catholic Church represents is not a new succession. It's a purification and reunion of multiple valid lines now exercised under a renewed Catholic identity. We're not guessing. We know where we come from. But we also know this: apostolic succession without apostolic faith is a shell. That is why the English Catholic Church pairs succession with doctrinal integrity, moral accountability, and pastoral responsibility. We don't believe in valid sacraments from corrupt shepherds. That's why we've instituted zero tolerance for clerical abuse, transparent episcopal governance, doctrinal clarity rooted in the faith of the first millennium of the church, but without the heresies. We don't just want bishops in the line of the apostles. We want bishops who live them as bold men in faith, humble in service, and obedient to Christ. Apostolic succession is the bloodstream of the church. It connects us to Christ, not just by memory, but by ministry. And in the English Catholic Church, we protect, preserve, and live that succession, not as a title, but as a sacred trust. Thank you for that question, Cedric. Question two comes from Father Matthew Sinbunim from South Korea and Pastor Rick Smith from North Carolina. Could you talk about the rich tradition of English monasticism and about some of the orders in the church? English monasticism not only shaped Britain's Christian identity for over a millennium, but it is now being reborn and reimagined across the globe through the English Catholic Church's vibrant religious communities, and finally allowed to flourish. Let's begin at the beginning. Before Augustine of Canterbury ever landed on English shores in 597 AD, monastic life was already flourishing among the Celtic Christians. Saints like Patrick, Columba, and Aidan laid the groundwork for monastic evangelism, founding communities that would serve as spiritual beacons and missionary centers for centuries to come. Take Lindisfarne, the holy island off the coast of Northumbria, where St. Aidan established a monastery that combined rigorous asceticism with pastoral outreach. Or Iona, the remote Scottish island where St. Columba and his monks kindled the Christian flame that would spread throughout Scotland and northern England. After the Synod of Whitby in 664 AD, which aligned English practices with Roman custom, Anglo-Saxon monasticism entered a golden age. Think of St. Benedict Biscop, founder of the twin monasteries of Monk Wearmouth and Jarrow, centers of learning and culture, or St. Bede the Venerable, whose scholarship preserved much of the Western world's understanding of early church history. Monastic houses became more than just places of prayer. They were libraries, schools, hospitals, and shelters. They were the social infrastructure of medieval England. While the English Church had a number of monastic rules in play, the rule of St. Benedict became the anchor of most monastic communities by the time of the Norman conquest. The Benedictine model emphasized ora et labora, prayer and work, as a balance of contemplation and action. Under kings like Alfred the Great and later Henry I, Benedictine monasteries became engines of reform, renewal, and resistance, even during the turmoil of the Hundred Years' War and the Black Death. English monasticism remained a resilient and faithful witness to the church's life. But then came the dissolution. In the 1530s, Henry VIII, seeking both theological control and financial gain, dissolved the monasteries. Over 800 monastic communities were destroyed, and with them centuries of sacred memory. It was a wound to the very soul of English Christianity, and yet the story did not end there. Despite the loss, English monastic ideals never fully extinguished. The Oxford movement in the 19th century reignited interest in religious life. Orders were refounded, monasteries were rebuilt, both within the Anglican communion and among the Roman Catholics. And today, the English Catholic Church stands in continuity with that great tradition, not merely as a historical echo, but as a living reality. We don't just admire the monastic life, we live it. Across the world, the English Catholic Church is nurturing and forming religious communities that carry forward the monastic and apostolic spirit of our ancestors in the faith. Let me introduce you to a few of them. The Fratelli della Croce, a Benedictine priestly fraternity rooted in the rule of Saint Benedict, is growing in the United States of America, Africa, and Asia. They combine the depth of contemplative spirituality with pastoral outreach and liturgical excellence, embodying the heart of English Catholic Benedictinism. The Marian Missionaries of Charity in Switzerland carries a unique cultural and spiritual witness, bringing together both Benedictine monastic spirituality with the legacy of those orders which were once filled with nurses, doctors, and that were the backbone of healthcare in their communities. In Benin, the Gallican priestly fraternity of St. Melchizedek continues this legacy in West Africa, drawing from both Gallican and Benedictine traditions while providing solid formation for clergy and monastics. Two separate Franciscan orders, one in North Carolina and another in Pakistan, are living out the radical poverty and joy of St. Francis within the English Catholic framework. They remind us that monasticism isn't just about enclosure, it's about embodying the gospel among the poor, the suffering, and the marginalized. The Communauté Toussaint de Nandangang in Canada carries a unique spiritual and cultural witness, bringing together monastic spirituality with the legacy of African diaspora faith. And in Cameroon, the Crozon Friars of the Sacred Passion are bringing to life the sacrificial, contemplative, and missionary dimensions of the cross under the charism of the Passion of Christ. This is not nostalgia, this is resurrection. We're not trying to recreate the past. We're reclaiming the soul of what English Christianity has always been, apostolic, monastic, sacramental, and rooted in the lived experience of faith in the world. More than 50% of the world now speaks English as a first or second language. That linguistic reality is providential. It gives the English Catholic Church a unique calling to be a unifying, mission-driven Catholic voice that transcends nations, race, and class. English Catholicism isn't bound to one island anymore. It's a communion, a network of vowed men and women, clergy and laity, who seek holiness not in isolation, but in solidarity with the global church. So when we speak of the English Catholic Church, we're speaking of a living monastic spirit, rooted in Lindisfarne, Iona, Glastonbury, and Westminster, but stretching now to North America, West Africa, Pakistan, Cameroon, and beyond. This is the vision, a church that remembers who she is, who she was, and who she's called to be. And in that memory, there is hope. And we thank you, Rick and Father Matthew, for asking that question. Finally, friends, let's talk about what to expect from this episode on. Now that I've laid the groundwork, it's time for you, the listener, to chime in with topics you would like to hear discussed in future episodes. Truly, without you, this podcast is truly pointless, and it would be short-sighted not to admit that. I do have some interviews that I would like to do, and maybe we'll get lucky and have a special guest or two in the future. But until then, don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, and turn on the notifications wherever you get this podcast at. I'm Bishop Jaden Haygood, and God love you.